The first round is on Owen's Recovery Science. Owen's Recovery Science is a single source
for PTs,
OTs,
ATCs,
DCs,
and other medical professionals
seeking certification
in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training. Find out more and get certified
at owensrecoveryscience.com.
Can't thank you guys enough for taking a listen to the show, well, since we started it in 2015. Looking back on the year that was, 2017, we're going to give you the top 10 episodes of 2017. Take a listen. They're in no particular order. Can't thank you guys enough for, number one, listening, and then doing the thing we love even more, telling a friend, sharing an episode that you liked on social media, emailing the show to a colleague. Keep that up. That's the only way that the show can survive and be totally free to you. Without further ado, here's an episode from the top 10 of 2017.
Spring is in the air, and it's the season for growth and new experiences in your career. Explore the country with rewarding travel assignments through Arias Medical Group. Know a PT? Make a referral and earn up to $1,000. To learn more, call 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's AURUSmedical.com.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
Bringing in for the real thing. So we're going to wing this, which is how I like to do it. I like to do it unprepared.
Really? I've never done a podcast prepared before.
Oh, that's the way to do it.
That's how to do it.
Kind of ordinary.
All right, so I started off the same way every time. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. The next episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. We're doing selfies during the intro.
Wait, I wasn't in that.
Sarah Hay. Peter O'Sullivan are doing selfies.
Ow.
Right now. Can I get in there too?
Hang on.
And it's four way.
Ball in a selfie.
And up top. There we go. Good. All right. We're taking this picture. Introduce yourself from right to left on your radio dial. Who are we talking to?
I'm Valerie Bob.
Valerie Bob, where are we from?
I am in Dallas, Texas. I am the Women's Health Residency Director at the BIRTW Women's Health Residency.
Damn.
But I'm originally from Wisconsin, so I still call myself a Wisconsinite.
I like it. Sarah Haig, you're from Chicago.
From Chicago.
Are you from Chicago? Though?
I'm from an hour south of Chicago.
We'll say you're from Chicago.
Actually, I was going to say, it's really not much fun where I'm from.
All right.
But the Bears now have their summer camp there, Bourbonnais, Illinois. I went to Bradley Bourbonnais Community High School. Yeah, so I'm one half of Entropy with Sandy Hilton.
You've been on the show before. The audience.
Everyone knows.
The audience knows you. And Peter O'Sullivan from Down Under.
I am. I'm from Perth, West Australia, but I grew up in New Zealand.
Did you really? I didn't know that.
I am a Kiwi, yeah.
Really?
So I grew up in a small town called Palmerston North.
How'd you get?
Which no one would know about.
What do you got? We call it across the pond from here to the UK. What's the nautical
they
term?
The Australians call New Zealand West Island.
They call it what?
West Island.
They call it West Island, not Ireland.
No,
I think it's West Ireland. I'm like, explain that to me. Yeah.
So I did my PT training in New Zealand in Dunedin, right down the bottom.
Okay.
And then went to Western Australia to do my postgraduate training and do my PhD, and I've been stuck there. So I'm kind of half-time academic and half-time clinical practice.
And this is your first trip to a combined sections meeting.
It is.
And we were talking in the back of the room. We should set up the scene here. So CSM, but we are at the 40th birthday party of the section on women's health.
Yeah.
It's true.
And awesome. This is a big party right now.
It is.
It's a shindig.
And so I've been privileged to come here to talk about pain in women.
All right.
And women carry the greatest burden of pain, so it kind of makes sense.
Well, what do you guys want to talk about?
So what do you know about pain?
Oh, God.
I can't wait. This is going to be great.
I am not stepping into that. Because many people have quoted you.
Oh, really?
Or David Butler or Laura Mosey on my show and saying, where is PT education in terms of pain lacking?
Right.
And I'm just going to go, you know what? I'm going to wave the white flag and say, whatever we got, it's not what we need.
Right.
So I'm not.
So what do we need then? That's a good question.
No.
What we need is a good question, though, right?
So what do we need?
So what do you think, Sarah?
Sarah, what do we need in terms of pain education?
We need to start in the schools. So I graduated 15 years ago, and it was still the gait theory is what I learned, and that was it.
Yep.
and then we would stretch hamstrings because that would fix everything.
Well, it does.
Right. And as long as your VMO is doing all right,
fine.
You're set.
Your knee pain's right. good.
Your knee pain's good.
So, true story, Sarah and I were in PT school at the same time at the same university.
It's true. You were a year ahead?
A year ahead. Yeah.
But we didn't know each other till later. But
now, I don't remember her at all. Isn't that bad?
It's awful.
How did you not know Sarah?
I know.
She's not
I was actually pretty quiet in school.
Sorry? Excuse me?
Right.
Actually, comes as a great surprise.
It might have been asked if I thought I was really PT material and maybe I should consider a different career.
Here's a funny story. So that same thing came up with me.
Was it Dr. Pan?
It was not Dr. Pan. It was a different, and I don't know if we should say that on the radio, but...
But he said it. It's okay.
Right. So I think this is a good example of how grades don't always necessarily make a clinician.
Yeah.
Good.
So for us, pain has changed so much in the 17 years I've been out of school.
The understanding of pain.
That's well a very done. Good statement.
Jinx.
Okay. All right. Very good. Entry level. So I teach an entry level program now. I teach postgraduate and entry level. And they have no pain science really in the entry level still, which I think is a disservice. And that's what I'm trying to change at Texas Women's University for sure.
I've done 170 something episodes of this show, and I would say pain science probably comes up the most. Steve George has been on the show. Karen Litzy's talked about pain. Pain comes up a lot, and I feel like I've been a PT for 6 months. I still have no idea. So when you're saying, what do I need to know or what do I know? Nothing, and I need to know more or something.
The interesting thing about pain is that we have these preset ideas that pain equals damage, injury, harm, right? So we're taught it from a young age. You know, if you're in pain, you got to protect it, you got to look after it. Means there's something damaged, you should check it out.
Hurt equals harm.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What we don't understand is if you look at an epidemiological perspective on pain, it kind of looks like something like asthma. So asthma is like a disorder that often emerges, you know, in children, kind of goes a bit pear-shaped during adolescence. Some kids get better, some get worse. It has these different trajectories. It kind of has flare-ups and it settles down. Some, for some people, it's chronic and disabling. Back pain looks like that. And so if you look at a kind of a population or an epidemiological view on pain, it emerges like big time during adolescence. So it kind of pops up at times of massive change, physiological change, biological change, social stress change, all that kind of stuff. And so times of massive change like adolescence, pregnancy, you know, transitions from into menopause, time changes in your life
so
around retirement.
Something consistent.
Something bursts out.
Okay.
Right? We've got this idea in society, it's kind of something around damage. And so we set all these rules around treating pain like it's damage, and we scan it and we find stuff because everyone's got stuff on a scan, and we call it damage and we treat it like it's damage, and we create a monster, which is why your country's like in big trouble. Because it's got $86 billion
opioids.
Spend a year on pain.
Get rid of the pain.
Just back pain.
Give me some
scanning and chopping up people.
Sure, give me some
for that reason.
Get rid of the pain today. I want the pain gone today.
Yeah.
And so to that point, that's where I spend most of my world is pregnancy. And so they're coming in for pain. And they're coming in fearful.
Got it.
They're coming in being told by their doctor that something is wrong, they shouldn't move. If they move the wrong way, something's going to happen to the baby. And they're already woman who feels bad because they're not having a normal pregnancy, and they feel immediately the psychosocial component of I'm a bad mom and I can't carry my baby and my friends didn't have this problem. And so there's so much of that psychosocial component that drives it up even further, and there's fear, so much fear that if they do the wrong thing they're not going to be able to carry their pregnancy, and it is so driven by that. And then if they had pain in a previous pregnancy or if they had a really traumatic delivery, it's even worse. So much worse.
So where do we start? Or where do you start, I should say? What do you start with?
I start with getting my patient's story. That is the
listening.
Most important part. Listening, asking questions, letting them tell me their story. We live in a healthcare world where I am lucky in some ways because I get an hour with my patients. I get a one-on-one visit with my patients. That doctor spends 3 to 5 minutes with them. And I often will go back to the doctor and say, did you know X, Y, or Z? And the doctor's like, oh no, they didn't tell me that. Well, how much time did you spend with them? And it's not always the doctor's fault.
Even in PT, I read this. There was a study out that the average patient is interrupted at the 15-second mark.
Yep.
Exactly.
We interrupt them.
So my lead question is, tell me why you're here. And they just start.
And then what do you do?
I listen. I shut up my mouth. I don't sit there and ask my laundry list of questions. And sometimes we're on a computerized documentation system, so I do, you know, have to type stuff in, but often I just stop typing. I just sit and listen.
Social cues, eye contact. If you're typing, you're not listening. You can't. You can't be 100% listening if you're a little bit typing.
Yep.
So that's great. Where do you start?
I usually do say, like, what can I do to help you? Like, what can I do for you?
I start
you?
With, like, you know, what brings you here today? What brought you here today?
Or
what's going
like
on?
That. And just let, and yeah, just let them talk. And it's fantastic, the information they give you. And yes, I did it before this weekend. Because Peter's a big fan of that. Of hearing
I am
the story.
A huge fan of that.
But
I'm a storyteller. So everyone's got a story. And my first word is, tell me your story. And they will always tell you something that's really important in that first minute if you just shut up. Always.
Yeah, I heard this a lot.
And you hold on to that.
I heard this a lot when I was a student doing these interviews. And I was like, well, I know that's true, but you have to be really smart to get the story. And I've learned, if you zip it, they're going to tell you the answer.
Absolutely. And you've got to be interested. Like, people can tell if you're interested in their story. And if you don't look interested, they're not going to tell your story.
Like you said, if you're typing, you're not listening, you don't look interested, so they're going to, okay, yeah. I'm done, right? It's my turn. I'm done talking?
Yep.
And the biggest thing I tell my residents, because they get really worked up on, but I have to do this test, and I have to do my pelvic floor exam, and I have to do whatever. I'm like, if you get their buy-in the first visit, and they think you care, there's going to be a second visit.
I will.
You can get all that information on the second visit.
All right. I'm going to defend students and new PTs on this, because I've been PT for 6 minutes. I've been PT for like 10 minutes now.
6 minutes.
I'll say this. We just feel like we need to be doing something. You
oh,
know
absolutely.
What I mean? So that's probably why I know. I'll only speak for myself right now. That's why I rush to something, is because I'm like, I'm supposed to be doing something, right? All right, I'm supposed to know what I'm doing. So we rush to it, and I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that's why.
Yeah. Well, in our computerized documentation, you have to put those things in, or you can't close your note, and then you can't bill for that day. So you know what you put in? Defer to next treatment, and you set a goal to get it done. That's how I work around my system, because I have to.
Yeah.
You know, there's a difference between what you have to do for your system and what you have to do for your patient.
Ooh,
and really,
like
what you do for your patient should really trump. You
right.
know, I mean, we have obligations to write things down,
yeah.
what we did, but it's really cute when it's under the objective section. And really, all of the things that you're going to check are not actually objective.
Nope.
The important parts are what the patient tells you.
Yes.
So if you're checking range of motion, if you're checking this stuff, it's not actually objective. The degrees you write down, not objective. It's not.
I know, but I didn't know that 6 months ago.
Because they don't teach it in school. And
I know, that's
where we need to go. It's like, what's really the important information we need here?
And on top of that, if you ask the patients what they value, number one's communication, number one. Number two is education. Number three is a plan. And they like their preferences taken into account. And they like it to be individualized. So they don't want to be treated like a number. They want to be cared like an individual. So there's a bit of a mismatch between what we think people want and what people actually want. And we often give them what we think they want instead of actually asking them what they want, which is usually, if it's pain, I want my life back. I want to be able to play with my kids. I want to go and do the fun stuff. I wouldn't mind having some control of my pain, but actually it's much more about living. And once you get living, kind of pain goes into the background.
Yeah.
If you can live.
We heard a story from Tracy Scher talking about one of her patients. And this blew me away. It was a pelvic floor, male pelvic floor patient, had testicular pain to the point it brought him to his knees, and had some nerve ablation surgeries, wound up having a testicle removed, and he woke up from surgery. Pain still there. It was S2, but he had never seen a physical therapist. And if that doesn't sell physical therapy as a field, but specifically pelvic floor, you know, say male physical therapy, I don't know what does, because that is a horrible story. Should never happen again.
Absolutely. Well, it's the same thing actually with vulvodynia. You can still have that removed. So the tissue around the vaginal opening, they remove it if it hurts. It was really funny. I was talking with Sandy about that one day. And it's like, you know what really sucks more than vulvodynia is like phantom vulvodynia. what are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's the backstory. I mean, you fuse these discs that are meant to be the source of the pain, or you replace them, and 30% have still got the pain.
Right.
And they're probably worse.
Yeah.
So we have this idea that it's all about damage, and if you fix the damage, it's fixed, and it's, well, what do we got? We've got a big problem.
We got to go pay some student loans. We'll be right back.
Do you treat patients with chronic pain, recurring sports injuries, or posture issues? Then check out Rock Tape, the world's best kinesiology tape.
Stickier, stretchier,
and superior to competing tapes. Rock Tape stays on through any activity
for up to 7 days.
Physical therapists qualify for medical pricing. Get started at rocktape.com/start. Rock Tape also offers CEUs nationwide, so you can learn how to use the world's best tape
with cutting-edge, evidence-informed techniques
while earning the continuing education credits you need.
Get started at rocktape.com.
Spring is in the air. It's the season for growth and new experiences in your physical therapy career. Explore the country with healthcare staffing agency, Aureus Medical Group. You'll find rewarding travel and full-time career opportunities nationwide. Know a PT? Make a referral and earn up to $1,000. To speak with a recruiter, call 1-800-340-2619 or visit aureusmedical.com. That's A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com.
Let's give a nice, warm welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now. So how do we change it in terms of a field? Because we've got students' attention. How do we get it into academia? Because we know, notoriously, it's a slow process to get things to change.
I think we've got a problem. We've got a challenge at the culture level. Like, we actually have to educate the population.
Let me ask you.
Because we've got industry that is driving this business, right?
Is this just a U.S. PT education problem?
It's a world education problem. So if you look at people, community beliefs around pain, you ask kids about pain and they'll go, oh, back pain means I need to rest. Back pain means it's going to get worse as I get older. Back pain means it's going to get worse. You know, I'm going to be in trouble. I won't be able to go to school and play sport. Now, those beliefs are passed on by their parents. Those kids grow up with those beliefs. They get pain, they take time off school, they stop sport. They are then the adults who take time off work and drop out and seek care and get treated, right? So unless we break that system, they're always going to be seeking treatments for their damaged body. And there are lots of treatments being delivered for that. So we have to hit the media. We have to get involved in social media. We got to be hitting the population. And we got to get into the PT schools.
Isn't the perception of physical therapy different in Australia versus the US, though?
I don't know. I mean, all I know about the US system is that you guys do a ridiculous amount of chopping.
What I meant is, what is the average person in Australia's view of a physiotherapist? Isn't it of higher regard?
It is pretty high, but I think, you know, what we have is a situation where we are encultured around thinking pain equals damage. So even if you educate people, you default back to your core beliefs. And we've just done, one of our PhD students, JP Canera, has just done the study looking at PT's views on, say, lifting. You know, is it dangerous to lift with a round back? So 2/3 said no. All of them implicitly say yes. So when we do implicit association tests on them, matching different body positions with safe or danger, they're all thinking it's dangerous. They might explicitly say one thing, but actually they're thinking somewhere else. So we've got a cultural problem around understanding pain, I reckon. And that's something we've got to really challenge.
How the hell do we do that?
Look, I think we've just got to change the culture. So we've got to get in and educate kids. So we've been doing some work around getting into schools, educating kids. You know, kids are involved in sport and they're dropping out, targeting them and addressing that early. Because the interesting thing, if you ask adolescents who have back pain, who are involved in activity, they're not frightened of their back pain. But if you ask the kids without pain what they think about back pain, they're frightened of it. So actually, having pain and knowing that it's not a problem kind of creates self-efficacy, right? So we've got to get into schools and say, hey guys, pain is no different than the common cold. Headaches, you're not worrying about your head being damaged. Back pain's no different. Let's see it like that.
Yeah, I'm a pediatric physical therapist now, and as seen that, kids are pretty plastic.
Massively.
Like, you know, I've had a patient fall, and if I don't react, he doesn't react.
Got it.
Which tells me right now, I can affect his perception of just happened based on my reaction.
As long as you're trusted.
Right.
So if you've got a parent going, oh my God, you know, be careful, watch out, and they don't trust you, they'll go, default to the parent.
What should the PT world, how should they seek out more pain education?
I reckon clean the cupboard. So
I like that a lot.
So we've had these discussions about the PT programs are completely stuffed, right? So to stick something else in just feels too stressful. We do teach so much stuff that really, well, one isn't valid and two is not reliable and three is not predictive. So why don't we get rid of that stuff and then put some good stuff in? So I reckon you got to clean the cupboard like a spring clean and just go, okay, what's the really cool stuff in here that we need to hold on to? And there's a lot of it. And what's the stuff that actually we could get rid of because it's not reliable and we spend too much time on it and it doesn't build the self-efficacy of the therapist? And what are the core dimensions that are important here? And actually, if you look at the key things for any health disorder, they look the same. You know, there are social components, there's psychological components, there's cognitive components, there's physical components. You know, your issues around comorbidities, there's always genetic environmental interactions. We should have a program that has a holistic view on a human being and then you modify it for each disorder that you might see. Be it developmental. I mean, you tell me if you're dealing with a kid with a developmental order and you've got a parent who's got a mental health problem, how's that going to work?
Yeah.
Not going to work,
yeah.
Right? So that social environment is a roadblock for recovery, no different to pain.
To that point, traditionally, our postgraduate education, so our master's or DPT programs, have been modeled after the undergraduate program, so compartmentalizing everything. If we are supposed to be developing postgraduate caliber clinicians, we shouldn't have to compartmentalize everything. We should be able to take this whole system-wide model and look at the patient as a whole. Because I don't care what you come in to see me for. I was an orthopedic therapist. I still am. I still treat orthopedics.
What do we say? Orthopedics in a warm, dark place, right?
Yes, exactly. And that's my thing. My residents, I'm like, you are an orthopedic therapist first. It is the lumbopelvic hip girdle. It is not the pelvic floor by itself. So for me, like, if you're evaluating a patient for a shoulder issue, you have to look at the neck. You have to look at the thoracic spine. You have to look at the low back. You sometimes have to look at the hip. So you have to be able to put multi-systems together. So when we're teaching them in little boxes, you're not connecting those boxes. That is no different than pain. Pain is a peripheral system. It is a central system. It is cardiovascular. It is everything together. You've got to be able to pull that together. And we don't teach it that way.
If no one's being taught that way, no one's going to think that way.
And I think that's why case-based models are really good. So if you've got a case, then you look at the social dimension, the psychological, cognitive, the physical, you know, the health comorbidities, that makes sense in an individual. And you go, how do you get that information? How do you synthesize it? How do you set a plan? How do you explain that to the person in a sensible, meaningful way that considers their health literacy and set them on a journey? And that would be the same for the pelvis, for the back, for the neck, for developmental problem, you name it, right? That's just treating human beings with respect.
Yeah. Well, and something you said this weekend, and I completely agree, is as far as, so ConEd, so okay, so you got your PT school, you got your degree, you got your license, you're out there, where do you go? What do you do? What you do is you don't look for the thing that's going to promise to cure pain this weekend. You don't look for level 17 of a technique that's going to promise to cure things. It's rampant in our profession.
Yep.
42 levels to get your certification.
Yep.
And we just need to take a step back and learn how to think and communicate as opposed to do stuff to people all the time.
I so agree with that. You know, one of the things I think we've been trapped into is like reassessment, right? At the end of the day, I've had someone who's had pain for 12 years. I really don't care how they feel right now. I really care whether they're living in 2, 3, 4, 6, 12 months, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, because pain is a trajectory. And if you track pain over time, it just bounces around that trajectory. Now, if you want to impact on someone's health, you've got to impact not on their symptom, but on the drivers of the symptom. So you've got to go back a step and go, what are the drivers here? What is your understanding or your mindset of your health? What are your core beliefs? What are your behaviors around that health problem? That will predict your trajectory. The other things we need to impact on.
And the problem with that is that often starts with their upbringing.
Totally
does. And that's something that's so hard for the medical community to get their head around.
Can't undo that.
Well, you can undo that. You can affect it. You can work on it. And I often, as much as we're not supposed to share our personal lives, I've had a neurological condition since I was 5 and been in chronic pain since I was 5. Every minute of my life, and you wouldn't look at me and think of that. Like, if I stopped and thought about it, I have pain somewhere right now. But it doesn't affect me. I can move fully. I live a very active life. And so when I have those patients that are really struggling with that locus of control, I'm like, look, I'm going to tell you a story I'm not supposed to, but I give a 10-second version of it. My parents did something really good for me. They looked at that 5-year-old and they said, look, you're going to live your life. And I can't even tell you, like, pinpoint exactly what they did, but it was kind of suck it up buttercup in a nice way. But it was, like, you are going, you're going to go to your friend's house, and you're going to be in sports, and you're going to move. And, yeah, when it gets to a certain point, we're going to do some things to bring it down, but you are going to live your life. And I have. And that's part of the reason why I love this population so much, is because so many of these people don't have those coping strategies and have never been given that control that my parents were so good at giving me.
Yeah.
And I want to be that person to make that difference in their life.
And I reckon if you've got, that's kind of feeds into something really important, therapeutic alliance. So if you do not have a trusted relationship with your patient, why the hell would they believe you to do something completely alien to them? Why would they drop their fundamental beliefs and the way they respond to their health to take another route? And they will only do that if they feel validated by you, listened, cared, empathy, you know, heard, facilitated, supported, guided, you become a coach. And that's the goal. If you don't get that, you've got nothing. You've got nowhere to go.
And it's not easy. I can't come up with those coping strategies. I have to ask the questions to facilitate them to think about it. What's important to them? What do they see doable in their life? You know, what do they already have instilled that they can look at and say, these are things that will bring about safety in my life that I can rely on or damper down the dangers? And that's what I have to look at for them. If I tell them, well, you need to do this, and they haven't brought that on their own, it's not going to be as effective.
Right.
And it's not going to give them that control back, because then they're still relying on me.
And that's the power of reflection. And I think, you know, for those who might be manual therapists, which I am out there, you know, we kind of wear this, you have this capacity to give people pain relief, but it's only short term, and it doesn't change trajectories. So we have to use that tool so wisely, because it is so tempting to kind of give someone pain relief where I'm the person giving it, kind of gives me a boost as an ego thing. But actually, the greater joy is to give someone the ability to control their pain and take that on and be independent of me and take a journey. And that's gold, yeah. I reckon.
Similar mindset, but different situation, not necessarily about pain. As I tell my pediatric patients' parents, like, look, your kid's with me 1 hour a week, maybe two.
Got it.
They're with you 168
Got it.
Hours
the best
a week.
Teachers.
I'm going to see some things that in your kid, but I'm going to tell you what to do.
Got it.
If you don't do it, we're not going to get any changes.
Got it.
And that's what,
what I say to people. I go, I might give you a few exercises, right? But that is absolutely useless and redundant. You have to integrate this into your life in terms of behavior change. Because if you don't do that, it won't work.
I like it. What do you think?
I think I completely agree. And I think it's interesting how weird it is when I say I don't give people home programs. Really, like when they're done with PT, like they're back to life. But still, people will come in from going to physical therapy with their books of exercises that are boring. And I don't think that's terribly helpful. Yeah, it's a mind shift.
Yep.
But that's how we're taught in school still.
No, good.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm going to tell you the same thing I tell my residents.
All right.
Other people's happiness is not reliant on you. Other people getting better is not always reliant on you.
Oh, that second part. They have to do some stuff.
They have to do some stuff.
But if you think about it, you know, we blame our patients for not being compliant. But you do these boring exercises that they have not, that's not related to their goals. They're sometimes painful. They see no benefit. They see no path. Why would you do them? You know, if you identify people, the thing in life that they really love, and you drive your interventions to get them back to it, you'll have happy human beings.
So every episode that we do is, we call it a pint. And before we're done with the pint, we do shots.
This is The Parting Shot.
Powered by Optum. Optum offers weekend courses that are Monday morning applicable, utilizing approaches that make sense.
They promote excellence in hands-on treatment, exercise prescription, pain science, and clinical reasoning, offering a COMT,
as well as an APTA-accredited fellowship in orthopedic manual therapy, both online and in-person mentoring, with locations in Houston, Dallas, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Find out more online
at OptumFellowship.com.
So, parting shots of wisdom. We're going to go from right to left. If you're going to leave, you want to go left to right? All right. Well, we have to know. Ladies first. We're gentlemen here. We're gentlemen.
I got to think of something.
Oh, my God.
Okay,
so
mine.
What would you want to leave the audience with? A little parting shot of wisdom. Valerie.
The most important skill that you can develop is your listening skill.
I like that very much. Sarah, what do you got? Parting shot.
Most of the time, doing less is exactly what you should be doing to get more done.
That's good. I like that. All right, Peter, parting shot.
All right, I kind of combine a few here.
All right.
So examine your own beliefs, deep beliefs around your health, around pain, around what you value in your life. Be respectful and listen to your patients and take them back to a place that is valued. Ditch the rubbish. Move on.
Hashtag ditch the rubbish. Peter, Valerie, Sarah, appreciate you guys coming on the show.
Thanks, Jimmy.
And congratulations again. Doing anything for a year or 5 years or 10 years is a big deal. Doing something for 40 years, that's a major deal. So congratulations on the section for doing something like this. So good for you guys.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Cheers.
Hey, Jimmy.
Man, hug.
Awesome.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast, LLC.
It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast's CEO, Jimmy McKay, and CBO, Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it.
This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast.
Podcasting. It's a great way to reach a huge audience. We're portable, free to download, and can be heard across the planet. Here on the PT Pinecast, we can paint a picture for your company to help spread your message to physical therapists across the world. With our show, we can put pictures into people's minds. Here, let me show you what I mean. Like if I push this button right here, I can take you back to the Jurassic era when T-Rex roamed the earth. And when I click on this,
I'm behind the wheel of a race car. Turning left. Shake it big, boys.
We paint pictures with sound and can paint a picture of your company on our show that'll leave an impression. To have us paint for you and spread your message to PTs across the world, contact us online at ptpinecast.com. Let's see what this button does.
The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.